Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Firstly, good evening, John.
Hello, Ben Emmett.
Hello, John Dixon. How are you?
I'm good. Good.
Good, good to hear. As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. We'd love to hear from you. That's 087-179-1032. And you can catch us live, as always, on the live stream on the internet at dublincityfm.ie and also available as a podcast. So no excuses. We're going to start, as usual, with what to see in the night sky.
We haven't really been able to see too much this week, unfortunately.
It's been quite cloudy.
Yep, it would have been quite cloudy. It's been pretty rough and wet, and it's going to be windy again with weather warnings till the morning, sort of south and west, and not so much here. We seem to get away with most of it here in the Dublin area, so pretty good. Anyway, Mercury is very low in the east at dawn, as starting around the 19th, which is today, look for it about 45 minutes before sunrise, very far in the lower left of bright Venus. And a bright Venus is a good thing to watch as a guide. It's at -4.8. It's getting ever higher in the east before and during dawn, so keep an eye out for the next month or so. And this week it's at its peak brightness as the morning star, as we call it. And in a telescope, it's a thickening crescent, and that's the reason it's getting pretty bright at the moment. Mars, unfortunately, is out of sight, although not directly behind the sun, but in behind the glare of the sun, and will remain so for the rest of the year. So no chance really whatsoever of getting to see the planet Mars. Jupiter, on the other hand, -2.7, which is still quite bright. It rises in the northeast not long after dark, which is not far to go really now. It's sort of getting dark at the moment. And it's 2 weeks past opposition at the moment. Saturn shines at a good height for a telescope observing by 9 or 10 p.m. So they are streaking back into the skies, which is a good thing. And Uranus and Neptune. Now, I believe that Neptune is at its brightest today, if you can call Neptune bright.
Relative, isn't it?
Yeah, and it comes to opposition today. It's September the 19th, which it is today. And if you're a fan of watching Neptune, or have never got a chance, this is the chance to do it, because it is at its brightest. So really, the ones to look for at the moment is Venus. You can also look for Jupiter and Saturn, and although they are there, Uranus and Neptune as well.
Yes, hard to miss Venus. It's a morning object, this is not at the moment. Soon to be an evening object, but it is at its greatest brilliancy, for sure.
Yeah, just if you're a great red spot watcher in Jupiter, it came up at 3:17 a.m. this morning if you're out and about. Again, it'll appear if the evening clears up, which I don't think it will by the looks of things. 11:08 p.m. it appears for about half an hour or so, about it, because it spins quite quickly. And you can Google it as well, because it appears every sort of 9 hours or thereabouts. So a good thing to watch as well. It's fun to watch the great red spot, which would seat about 4 Earths in it. And it's a raging storm about 450 years old, thereabouts. Just won't stop.
Well, at least it was first spotted by Galileo. Galileo Galilei, when he turned his telescope onto the planet Saturn. Oh, not Saturn. Jupiter, I should say. And he noticed that great red spot, which turned out, as we later found out, to be a storm. So it's going since at least... Yeah. I think that was in about the early 17th century, 1609 or thereabouts. Not exactly sure, but how long before that storm has been raging? We don't know.
At quite a high wind speed, a Jupiter wind speed of about 450 miles per hour, which you don't really want to be in.
Certainly not. Certainly
what do you call that sort of winds and that? It's higher than a hurricane.
Oh, yeah, a hurricane here, with, yeah. if there's, I mean, the winds are 110 or something, that knocks over buildings.
It certainly does.
Four times that, you wouldn't. Yeah. Very few buildings that stand a chance, I'd say.
None whatsoever. So there you are. That's 11:08 tonight if you're out and about, or you get a chance if you're anywhere else on the world or planet listening in, and you'll get to see it later on. So that'll be good.
Thank you, John. Of course, we have the moon, and this, but it's very cloudy here in Dublin, but the moon is up at the moment. It's quite far west, because it will set in at 8:42 p.m. this evening. So that's about 35 minutes from now, if you can see it. And it will rise again tomorrow at just after 1:30. It's a 21% phase waxing crescent at the moment, but it will increase to 27% by the time it rises again tomorrow. It will be due south 5:20 tomorrow evening, slightly larger again, and then by the time the moon sets tomorrow evening at 9:01, there'll be a 30% crescent visible as we head towards the first quarter, which will be on Friday the 22nd at 8:30 to be precise. Now, of course, we do have the sun as well. Believe it or not, it's out there somewhere. Haven't seen it in a couple of days. But yes, it will rise tomorrow in Dublin at 7:06 a.m., which is a whole 12 minutes later than a week ago, and local noon, or when the sun crosses, is due south, crosses the meridian, that's at 18 minutes past 1 tomorrow afternoon, and that's 3 minutes earlier than a week ago, for those of you who keep an eye on the equation of time. It'll set tomorrow, John, can you believe it's at 7:29 p.m., 17 minutes earlier than a week ago. And from that time, 7:29 p.m. until 8:04, we'll have civil twilight. And from 8:04 to 8:45, we'll have nautical twilight. From 8:45 to 9:29, we'll have astronomical twilight. And then after 29 minutes past 9, we'll have astronomical night. That means there's 29 minutes less daylight tomorrow than we had a week ago. And tomorrow will be another 4 minutes and 10 seconds less daylight than today, when there'll be 12 hours and 33 minutes between sunrise and sunset. You mentioned, of course, Venus at greatest brilliancy and Neptune in opposition. Don't forget Friday 22nd, Culture Night. I'm not sure what's on from an astronomical point of view. I'm sure there is something if you Google it. And we have the first quarter moon on Friday as well. And Mercury in the morning is at greatest elongation west. There's Autumn Astronomy Day also on Friday, but I'm not sure exactly what that means. I didn't do my homework on that one. And on Saturday, the 23rd, we have autumnal equinox, which will happen at 7:50 a.m. to be precise. But on Monday, the 25th, we'll have equilux date for Dublin.
Equilux.
Equilux. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Equal light. So the difference between that and the autumnal equinox. As you know, the sun is a disc, and the sun set is when the last limb of the sun disappears below the horizon, and the sun rises when the first limb appears. So there's a bit of a time lag there. Well, the autumnal equinox is when the sun crosses the equator, isn't it? Yes, it is. But the day we'll have equal light in Dublin will be on Monday the 25th. There'll be 12 hours and 1 minute between sunrise and sunset. So on the equinox itself, there's a little bit more, I think it's 12 hours and 3 minutes or thereabouts. So that's all that's happening. Oh, the ISS, lucky enough tonight, it will be visible between 9:23 p.m. and 9:27 p.m. It's a decent pass too, John. Maximum altitude, 60 degrees. Altitude and quite bright too, a magnitude of -3.7. And when it's due south, at its nearest, it will be only 481 kilometers away, as opposed to an aircraft going by, which is many kilometers away, I don't know, 6-8 miles or something like that. But when you see it actually, you know, when you first see it about 9:23 p.m., it'll actually be about 1,500 miles away. It's just, and then 2 minutes later, it'll be 400 miles away. It'll be 1,000 miles closer after about 2 minutes.
If you want to know where to look, just go outside and point directly south, look up and to the right a little bit, so just in case you don't know where that is as well. So, first quarter moon was the 22nd, which is a few days away. The equinox, as you mentioned, 7:50 a.m. in Irish time on Saturday. And the full harvest supermoon, if you're into supermoons, which we all are, is on the 29th. So it's the full harvest supermoon.
It's not the harvest moon, the first moon of September. Or do they call the second one? If there is a supermoon or two moons in a month, is it also called
moon? I'm not quite sure on that one.
I thought they called it something else. Anyway, there'll be a supermoon again on the 29th.
Yeah. I'm not forgetting that the ISS will disappear out of our evening skies in October the 3rd, so we have a good couple of weeks to go before that happens. So that'll be always interesting to see the International Space Station.
Always worth seeing, and we'll bring you the times here on the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. And we're also available live on the World Wide Web at dublincityfm.ie. Space Week coming up in a few weeks.
Just ready, 4th to the 10th of October. Space Week is fast approaching, and Irish stargazers are already planning to celebrate their passion, like we are for science, by attending many of the out-of-this-world events. Great putting things like that together all around the country from 4th to 10th of October. We will do more on that later, and just a couple of historical heroes to look out for is Margaret Lindsay Huggins, along with her husband. She was into photographic techniques for astrophotography, and William Rowan Hamilton. He was a highly respected mathematician from Dublin, so into the fields of physics and that.
Invented the quaternions, which apparently are, if it wasn't for them, they're used nowadays in a lot of graphic design, 3D graphic designs and CGI and things like that.
Yeah, and Claire sent us in the email on that one. Thanks a million for that. Hopefully you are listening, but we will get in. We'll make contact actually during the week and see what else we can look forward to on Space Week this year.
Thank you, John. Now, it would be remiss of us if we didn't mention
a bit of fun.
Somebody said to me on Saturday while I was down with the Irish Astronomical Society down in Birr. We did a lovely tour of the grounds, the gardens. And saw the LOFAR radio astronomy area, or the dishes. Well, they're actually under tarpaulin to keep them from the rain, but that doesn't stop the radio waves. The actual frequency of light that they're looking at doesn't hamper that, nor does the clouds. But we had a very good tour guide giving us the lowdown on the history of Birr Castle, and of course we went over to see the giant Leviathan telescope with its 2 meter mirror.
Yeah.
It's in a state of disrepair. But I was getting off the subject. where was I going with that?
Yeah, or meteorizing.
Oh, the meteor, yes. Yeah. But, that's it. Somebody said to me on Saturday, what about, did you hear about the meteorite that landed on the beach in
Portmarnock?
I said, what? I'm sure we would have heard that. Yeah. I would have heard. I saw the pictures. Anyway.
Well, the media were out at it. And one of the Irish news channels corrected a slightly embarrassing mistake after reporting a suspected meteor strike. Now, I don't know whether you saw the picture of it. The rock itself that they found.
I did, yeah.
It's
fairly lump size of a, what would you say, a shoebox? Not quite shoebox.
Yeah, about that. But if that came hurtling towards the earth, as you mentioned earlier, at whatever speed it is, there would be a slightly bigger hole than the guys had dug. And the guy who found it was a space enthusiast and definitely thought he found an impact site while out walking his dog. And he felt complete shock when he did this. So he got out his bucket and spade from somewhere and started digging. So unfortunately, from the photographs, it's just a great big hole.
I saw a picture then of that somebody put up, I think it was on Instagram later, of the two guys who actually dug the hole in the beach with their buckets, their plastic buckets and spades and threw the rock into it to make. It reminded me of a story, John. I don't know whether I told you this before. I know we're going out, well, slightly off piste here. But I was in New Zealand a few years ago and I was on top of an old volcano. I think it's an extinct volcano or dormant, I'm not sure. But there was the beautiful caldera, you know, scooped out. It was like perfectly scooped out, like the inside of a perfectly made bowl. And there was some actually cattle grazing in it. And I can't remember what town this was near. But anyway, one year, many years ago, on April the 1st, that'll give you a clue.
Okay, I know where we're going here.
Yes. The natives woke up to see black smoke coming out of the caldera of the volcano, and there was major panic. But it turned out those pesky students from the nearby university had driven up in the middle of the night with lots of tires, threw them into the bowl, caldera, and set fire to them just before dawn and caused a lot of mayhem. But anyway, that's as an aside.
Now, we have something to look forward to on Sunday. I think Sunday's the 24th, isn't it? For the OSIRIS-REx asteroid probe coming back towards Earth for its sample delivery, which it scooped up, we reckon, about 150 grams of dusty, grainy stuff.
They reckon that they were hoping for a minimum of 150, although it was only when they set off. That probe was launched way back in September 2016, and at the time said they were hoping. They said we'd be lucky if we get 60 grams now, it'll be great, about 2 ounces. But they reckon they have more than that. In fact, when they scooped up the material, that scooped up so much that the valve or the container that it was being put into didn't close properly. And but they won't know exactly until they get back how much they have.
Yeah, exactly. And what's going to happen is it's just going to scoot past and drop this little piece of cargo into our atmosphere where it's going to be picked up. They reckon 150 to 250 grams. I'm not sure until they actually get this picked up from the asteroid Bennu in October 2020. So it took off in 2016. It motored around for quite a number of years, about 4 years, and had a few maneuvers to get it back to tracking into Earth's orbit to drop it here on the morning of September the 24th. That'll be interesting to see. Now, there'll be all sorts of interest in this. It'll be studied by scientists around the world, of course, shedding light on the formation and, indeed, the evolution of our solar system. And as of last Monday, would you believe, OSIRIS-REx was about 7 million kilometres away from Earth, so it gives you an idea of the speed of about 23,000 kilometres per hour as it's coming back here. So I'm not sure if they're going to slow it down or anything like that. They have made a few adjustments, all right, but they're just going to parachute the little canister down. And then it's heading off towards another asteroid as well, and we'll bring you more information up on that particular one. So looking forward to see what happens on Sunday morning here in Ireland, well, wherever it lands. Just going over to the Chang'e space station, where you can actually watch a video of the Shenzhou 16 astronauts cleaning the space station. And they've been working hard to do this. Now, with all the recycling of air and everything else going on up there, they've got to keep microbes and bacteria away. And the video shows the crew sorting through the Mengshan experiment module, giving a deep clean to the Wenshan module, including going over with a vacuum as well. But from the photograph I can see here, he looks like he's clinging to the wall, but he's actually just floating. He's tied his feet to the floor with all the straps that you have, and they're sucking and scooping and cleaning and Mr. Sheening and whatever else you want to do. So, as they say, regular cleaning also helps keep the potentially dangerous colonies of bacteria under control, which is, if they got out of control, it wouldn't be a funny thing up there. They'd be doing their self-experiments.
Certainly not. Thank you, John. And thank you to Alan, too, who, on the subject of Osiris Rex, says that Scott Manley does a great video on it. Must have a look at that. So there's a good place, I'm sure, to go to find out a little bit more about Osiris Rex. Just by way of comparison with Osiris Rex, just going back to it for a moment, and the plan to get 60 grams, and they think they have somewhere between 150 and 350 grams. But just for comparison, you may remember way back when, do you remember Japan's Hayabusa 2 spacecraft?
Mm-hmm.
When that returned with 5 grams of material from the asteroid Ryugu back in December 2020. And thinking about OSIRIS-REx, when it drops off its capsule into the Utah desert on Sunday, it's heading off then towards another asteroid. Apophis, which we've discussed here before many years ago, that we thought that it may, there was a chance that it would come so close to the Earth and its next relatively close flyby in the year 2029, that the orbit would be perturbed to such a degree that when it came back something like 7 years later, that it would actually hit Earth, which would have been really catastrophic. But they've done more calculations since then, and apparently we're safe for another 100 years from that particular asteroid anyway. But, as you know, they can come out of the blue.
Yep.
Them are all doomed, Captain, doomed.
Yep, that one will see me out anyway. I'll be fine. I'll be happy. I'm a bit happier now. 10 persons up in the Expedition 69 part of the increase in the International Space Station. So we've 10 aboard the space station at the moment. And they opened the hatches on September the 18th, which was yesterday. And the hatches between the ISS and the newly arrived Soyuz MS-24 spacecraft officially opened at 5:16 EDT. I can never remember quickly what EDT is against GMT. Is it,
that's usually, I think that's Eastern Daylight Time, Eastern United States. So if you add five to that, you'll get Irish summertime.
Yep. So the arrival of the 3 new crew members to the existing 7 already aboard, it increases the population to 10. That's quite a lot of people to have up there. So I hope they brought up loads of supplies and food and stuff. Great. So September the 27th is when 3 of them will come back to Earth as well. So it'll be back down to 7 again. So they seem to be quite happy in around the 6-7 astronauts, cosmonauts to do all their experiments, because it is a big station now, about the same size as our own Croke Park here.
That's the footprint, you know.
That's the footprint,
of the solar panels, yeah. But there are a good few modules, yeah.
Probably
room to move around.
3 meters square all the way around in the tubes.
There's the different modules that are attached on left and right and up and down. And not that there's much up and down. Speaking of which, John, I was talking to somebody earlier today, and they were saying about how good it is to get out the morning and let the light in. We're talking about the cortisol and waking up and getting some fresh air into the lungs and things like that for the day. Anyway, they said something to me which made me say to them, you wouldn't be very we won't be sending you to the International Space Station for a 6-month tour, because first of all, you don't see much daylight. It's mostly enclosed, and you're under artificial light most of the time. I said, but they do have this fabulous cupola. I'm sure you've seen the photographs and where they can see out and look at the Earth. And but I said, when I told them that every 45 minutes, I said, you'll see a sunrise and it'll be very quick. But 45 minutes later, you'll have a sunset. And 45 minutes after that, you'll have a sunrise. And 45 minutes after, you'll have a sunset. And they were horrified. They thought it was hell. I was going to say hell on Earth, but not quite on Earth. Hell around Earth.
They don't have much choice. Imagine the auroras that they see. I mean, I've seen quite a number of photographs that they've sent back as well, as the space station creeps through the north and south, southern hemispheres. In, you know, they're sort of, we call it an elliptical orbit, so it goes round and round and round. But the auroras are absolutely fantastic to see. The greeny ones that are right up here in the northern hemisphere, and the reddy ones in the ones that are down in the southern hemisphere. So, and funny enough, talking about the reddy ones, my sister lives in Adelaide in Australia, and she sent me a photograph of the southern lights.
That's it, completely Aurora Australis. Australis,
yeah, completely different. They're definitely red. There's no question about where we get the greeny, bluey ones up here. And I have seen them with mine own eyes.
Indeed you have. Mm-hmm. So have I, just from the end of my the end of the road in County Meath, in my hometown. That was many years, that was probably about 20 years ago, that was Halloween. And even with all the street lights and the light pollution,
you could still see it.
It was amazing.
Don't often get a chance to see that as well. I wanted to get in a little bit into the Parker Solar Probe and the Solar Orbiter team as they tackle the 65-year-old sun mystery. I don't know whether we have time for that one.
Maybe we could go through it quickly. We have about 2 minutes or a minute and a half.
Yeah, and there was another one as well. It's why does the North Pole move? That's we could talk about this for ages. But the Earth has several poles, not just two as we know it's north. And it has the geographic north and south poles, which are the particular points that mark out the Earth's axis of rotation. And it also has a magnetic north and south pole based on the planet's magnetic field. And when you use a compass, it points to the magnetic north pole all the time, not the geographic North Pole, and the Earth's magnetic poles move in a phenomenon called the pole shift. Now, Earth's magnetic North Pole moves in loops, and they've proven this to 50 miles per day, but the actual location, an average of all the loops, is also moving at a forward speed of 683 miles. So it's quite hard to understand this. So the magnetic South Pole moves in a similar fashion because it's directly opposite. And every once in a while, the two poles actually completely flip locations. And we've spoken about this before. So every several hundred thousand years, the North and South Poles swap locations. And the scientists can study when the Earth's geologic history, which is this happening by examining deep ocean sediment samples. So there are ways of proving this. And even in the rocks on the ocean floor, they retain traces of the field as well, similar to a recording on a magnetic tape. And the last time the poles switched was 780,000 years ago, and it has happened about 400 times in 330 million years. So it's
a due one, I believe.
Yeah, week after next or something. Yeah, it does. It's a really strange phenomenon. I've read about this loads of times. It's quite hard to get your head around.
Okay, John, that's it. Thank you very much. That's all the time we have this evening. Don't forget our email address for any comments, questions you may have is astronomy@umcityfm.ie. Thanks to John for his news items. And that's all from me, Ben Emmett, from this edition of The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Hello China. 9 o'clock, it's Bren Linnett with Threads. 11 p.m, it's Nigel Wood's World Music, called Ear to the Globe. And for midnight to 2 a.m, then we have Dave Barry in a program called After Hours and his mix of jazz, blues and soul. But please join myself and John at the same time next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening and say goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.